Hello, everyone, and welcome to another edition of America's Conservative Podcast. I am your host, Ed Dentz. It's Friday. You made it. Beautiful weekend ahead of you. I think I'm going to drive up to Floral City tomorrow morning. Have a nice drive. I haven't gone on a long drive in a while. It's been a while. So we'll take the Taurus up to Floral City, do a little disc golfing. Hope the car won't break down. Always cross my fingers on that. When you drive a 16-year-old car with 135,000 miles on, it's always good to have a AAA, which I have. So hopefully we'll get up there and back with no problems. And hopefully while I'm up there, I'll play some good disc golf, get some good practice in for next weekend. Want to talk about Jung Ho Gung really quickly. This is interesting, being that it does have at least a little bit to do with immigration, being that that's been a major topic in the United States the last few years. Jung Ho Gung is a baseball player for the Pittsburgh Pirates, my team that I follow. I've talked about them before. I'm sure you've heard that. Well, his visa, his work visa to play for the Pirates was denied this morning. And I believe the reason is that he has had some alcohol problems. Well, I should first state this. He's been with the Pirates, I'm going to say, 2 years now. I think they picked him up in 2015. He's a well-known South Korean baseball player. And the Pirates managed to pick him up. And there's a process that teams go through if they want to, I guess you'd say, buy or take players from baseball leagues in other countries. It happens with Japan, South Korea, I'm going to say probably in Mexico, where baseball is also popular, down into South America. There's a certain process that has to happen. It's just not like one of these players can, if they're wanted by an American, a major league team in the United States where there's a lot more of money involved, then one of these players just can pack up and move to the United States. It's generally not how it works. But the Pirates got him. Everybody was real excited about it. He's been a good player for them. But he has had his problems. And the question is whether some of these problems were covered up during the process of Major League Baseball teams, in particular the Pirates, when they were looking into him. Because we're now finding out that he has a drinking problem. He has gotten caught with DUIs in South Korea multiple times. And in fact, one of those times was already after the Pirates had already picked him up. And he, in South Korea, has stood for those, stood regarding those charges in court, and he's been fined, doesn't have to go to jail or anything. But the reason this is relevant is because he has been denied a work visa to get back into the United States. That just happened today. And I have to say that there was a growing suspicion this was going to be denied. And I think the reason he's being denied is because of these charges. That the United States government doesn't want to let into the country somebody who obviously has a drinking problem and has multiple DUI arrests. I think one DUI might get away with that. In fact, that's probably the covering up of these DUIs is probably the reason he got into the United States. If they'd known about him, he might not have gotten a work visa, you know, back in 2014, 2015, whatever year that was. And there might have been somebody who tried to keep that out of the news, and just, I'm sure somebody's going to look into that if they haven't already. But this is the way our immigration system should work. And dare I say it, but there does seem to be a double standard. Are we saying, does anybody really believe that people who have DUIs in this country, they're all not getting into the United States as well? From wherever. Doesn't matter if it's a Middle Eastern country. I don't care if the person is Muslim or Christian, atheist, or anything else. I'm going to happen to believe that there are people with DUIs who've gotten DUIs in the other countries who have gotten work visas or just regular visas, tourist visas, whatever you want to call it, to come live in the United States, work, play, go on vacation, go to school. I'm going to guess that happens every day. But because this guy, I guess you'd call him famous. I don't guess he's not the most well-known Major League Baseball player. Obviously, he's probably the most well-known baseball player from Korea who now plays in the major leagues in the United States. But I'm not sure if you're a fan of the San Diego Padres that you follow what Jung Ho Gung's doing for the Pirates. But because he is a little well-known and plays for, is a professional athlete and makes a lot of money, that's the reason that he got his visa got denied. And as much as I think that the right thing happened, I just wonder if the law is consistent. Now, the other side of this is that, you know, and I'm a huge Pirate fan. I'm a bigger Pittsburgh Pirate fan these days than I am Steeler fan. And that hasn't always been the case. That only started happening to me probably in around 2011, 2012, once it looked like the Pirates were going to get good in it again. I'll just admit it. And football, the NFL as a whole, has started to wear on me. It just has. Roger Goodell and all the concussion stuff, it just wears on me after a while. It has. As I think it has on other people too. Hence the ratings being a little bit down, TV ratings. So, as a Pirate fan, I can tell you, I don't want a guy like that on the team. Now, you should know, on the other hand, that David Freese plays for the Pirates. He has been caught with a DUI more than once. But he plays for the Pirates. So I find myself saying, is that right? Am I being consistent? And this stuff is tough. And I guess that David Freese gets the advantage of already being an American citizen, whereas Jung Ho Gung isn't. It's not like we can kick David Freese out of the country because he has some DUIs. But he could be kept out of Major League Baseball. But he didn't play for the Pirates when these things happened. I think he played for the Cardinals when he had these problems. And I'm not sure he got suspended. I'm going to guess that he had some charges, paid some fines. I don't think he spent any time in jail. I'm going to guess he lost his license for a while. And you should know, though, that these days David Freese will talk about those days and does apologize and is very sad about what he was doing at that time. And I've heard him talk about it. And in fact, he has been asked about Jung Ho Gung. You know, are you willing to help Jung Ho Gung once he is back on the team, you know, in some way, being that you have experience with this? And he said, yeah, you know, be happy to do that, give him some advice and everything else. But that doesn't look like that's going to happen now. Very well could be that Jung Ho Gung never plays another day, another game in Major League Baseball for multiple reasons. I don't know if any team will have him, first of all. Second of all, I'm not sure he'll ever be able to get back into the United States. I mean, if he gets denied now, I guess maybe if he stays out of trouble for a few years, 2 years, 3 years, 5 years, maybe they'll take a look at it. But, you know, he's a professional athlete. You have your certain prime years, and after that time, you start to go downhill. It's not like he's an engineer where he can be a quality engineer maybe to the day he dies if he lives to be 80, 85 years old. 5 years span is a long time in professional athletics, in any sport, in any sport. And Jung Ho Gung is not 21 years old. It's not like he'd be 26. I think he's already in his mid-20s, and by the time, let's say it's a five-year stint that he has to stay out of the United States, he'd be in his early 30s. Any team going to take a real serious look at him at that time? I don't know. It does, though, seem to me that there is some sort of double standard here in that he is a famous athlete, professional athlete, and being denied, where I say think that probably other people with same charges, same circumstances, who aren't well-known, are probably getting in. That's my suspicion. But like it or not, I guess what is happening to Jung Ho Gung is probably the way it should work. We don't need any more drunk drivers in the United States, even though it seems to me that drinking and driving is way down in the United States. And we know that automobile deaths continue to go down, although it did seem like there was an uptick last year or something. But over the last 40 years, driving a car has gotten a lot safer, mainly because of being so tough on drinking and driving. It's in everybody's mentality now, something 40 years ago it was not. And also cars have gotten safer. Even though the speed limit is up, cars are safer, more people are living, you can survive crashes a lot better these days. But it's an interesting topic. It does touch upon immigration. And it's one more way, though, I think that there are flaws outside of letting the wrong people in from Muslim countries or terrorists or anything else. But there are other flaws in the immigration policy that seem like there's some double standards going on that need to be fixed as well. Let's move on to something else. You know, it's getting bad. I have to touch upon this. I don't know how long ago on it, but you know it's getting bad when Ann Coulter starts to make fun of the Trump administration. I guess she was on, I only know this because I read it at the Daily Wire, that she was on Sean Hannity's radio show yesterday. Not on Fox News, but on his radio show. And she went on this rant that I read about. I'm sure she went longer than what they gave at the Daily Wire. But ultimately, her kicker line at the end was, and it was something about moving the money from one swamp to another swamp, and then saying that Trump's administration at this point is indistinguishable, there I said it, from what a Jeb Bush administration would be. She starts, where are the jobs, where's the wall, and everything else. And I think, you know, this is going along with something that I'm seeing out there, and I had a brief talk with my buddy Dave about this, actually this morning, in that now that, you know, it was the Trump administration, it seems, and I think that this was a priority of Congress as well, that healthcare, the Obamacare, the repealing of it would be a major point of the agenda. It was one of the starting points. It's something that I think a majority of Americans wanted to happen. Now, what a majority of the Americans actually wanted, I mean, a lot of people can agree on a general idea, but once you start getting into the specifics, people are going to start disagreeing and have different priorities. But Obamacare and repealing it was something I think that voters for Donald Trump wanted him to do. But now, being that we've had, and there was supposed to be a vote yesterday, and there's going to be a vote today, and who knows what's going to happen. I think no matter what happens in the House, this whole thing is dead in the Senate, so it's not going anywhere. But now that all of these problems, whether you want to blame it on the Freedom Caucus or whoever, there are many people out there, it seems, who now think that these problems that Donald Trump is having with this, to the point now where he's trying to threaten the Freedom Caucus and people who are not going to vote for the newfangled Trump Care, Ryan Care bill, that this is going to get in the way of other things that he wants to do. This is the fear. That this is going to get in the way of tax reform that he talked about, that his administration wants to do. That this is going to get in the way of building that wall and changing immigration and all of that. And so at one point, I guess, maybe just even a month ago, they were all hyped up about how we're going to, you know, and this is the problem that I mainly have with it. All these people were perfectly fine going after Obamacare and repealing it when Trump became president. But now that it's almost 2 months down the road since his administration started, and now the rubber is hitting the road where people actually have to start voting for stuff and bills are getting written and everything. Now it seems some of these people are backing away and saying, oh, this was a horrible idea. And I think that's what I'm hearing from Ann Coulter. That she thinks that the momentum that Trump had going into the presidency, if you believe in momentum, stuff like this, I do not. I play golf. There is no such thing as momentum. You're only as good as your next shot. Momentum exists until it doesn't exist. It's just something that people use when they have nothing else to say. I don't believe in it. Momentum exists in physics. That's it. In any case, they believe that this is ruining Trump's momentum from doing these other great things. Well, why do I think if Obamacare had been put on the back burner and said, okay, we're going to do tax reform first, or we're going to do immigration reform first, we're going to do this or that, and once problems would pop up in those political issues, and it's going to happen. You want to do tax reform? You're going to have problems there too. You want to do immigration reform? You're going to have problems there too. Why do I think that Ann Coulter would still be going on Sean Hannity and saying, you know, this immigration stuff, the problem is all bogged down, and tax reform, it's all bogged down. This is going to really hurt the momentum when we get to round of fixing Obamacare. This passes for insightful, intelligent commentary now on the conservative side of media. It's stupid. It's stupid. You know my attitude regarding all this. The problem that they are having is that they don't want to do what's right. They don't want, I talked about this yesterday. It's a curious case in politics when so many people are worried about keeping promises. It's a very curious, you know, kind of, I don't know, anomaly. In our daily lives, we want to keep promises. In politics, you say something, and then when you get into office, it seems like too many politicians back away from them for whatever reason. So this was a promise. Donald Trump said we were going to have the best health care. And we already do have the best health care in the world, despite Obamacare, even though I believe that it has diminished. And it will continue to falter. I think it will continue to get worse. But he said, we're going to have the best healthcare. We're going to be winning so much. And then something like this, they can't win on. Something that should be a slam dunk. And it's Donald Trump's fault, and to a lesser extent, Paul Ryan's fault, that this is going the way it's going. It's not the Freedom Caucus's fault. They didn't have anything to do with the writing of this bill. It was all Paul Ryan's idea and Donald Trump's idea. Remember the good old days when Paul Ryan and Donald Trump didn't get along? That wasn't even a year ago. That was going back to like last July. But now they're in agreement on a healthcare bill that is nowhere near what they talked about, what the Republicans talked about when they were running for office last year, if they were running. Of course, some senators didn't have to run for re-election for November 2016. But this is nothing compared, I think, what people thought it was going to be. And that's nobody's fault but Paul Ryan's fault, the House's fault, and to a much more extent, Donald Trump's fault. So to now blame other people is strange. In addition, getting back to Ann Coulter regarding all of this, it was something that I predicted last year that Donald Trump's not conservative. So how conservative of a health care repeal are you going to get? The question you should all be asking yourselves, if you still listen to what Ann Coulter says, is why was she fooled by this? Why is she surprised by it? Why is she acting on Sean Hannity's show that she's actually surprised by all of this? I don't know. I don't know. I don't have any special information on this show. I have no inside contacts. Anybody. She surely does. Why did she get it wrong? And why did I seemingly get it right? Mm-mm. I don't know. Healthcare repeal was always going to be something that's difficult, but the reason it's difficult is probably because it's worth doing. If it was easy, we'd all be suspicious about it. I would be suspicious about it. You know, that's the thing about Obamacare. Actually, in the end, it made it through the House quite easily. All the Republicans voted against it. All the Democrats voted for it. Got through quite easily. Went through the Senate, and there you go. And every time you see something like that, you should be suspicious. Well, now we know why we were suspicious. With something like this, the reason it's difficult is because there are actually some people who actually are trying to keep their promise, who actually know that this isn't an improvement, and so they're fighting back. Something that not enough Democrats had the guts to do in the House back in 2009, 2010. So when it was pretty clear that Obamacare was going to be exactly what it ended up being. So, and then the kicker on this regarding Ann Coulter being on Cheyenne's show, after this entire rant, which she ended with, this administration is indistinguishable from Jeb Bush administration. Sean Hannity said, "All right, Ann Coulter, holding him accountable, that's what we do on this program." Do you think that Sean Hannity holds Donald Trump accountable? Do you see how big of a farce this has all been? She goes ranting about Donald Trump and to me, making a lot of some statements that absolutely aren't true, that I think is a little bit of revisionist history. And then on top of it, Sean Hannity said, "Well, that's what we do here. I'm going to say it again. All right, Ann Coulter, holding him accountable, that's what we do on this program." No, you don't. Sean Hannity has never asked Donald Trump one time. He's never tried to paint Donald Trump into the corner on any political issue ever, which is supposed to be the media's job. He's never done that ever. This is all such a farce. It is so, it's pathetic. It's disgusting. It's a dang shame. It's sad. It's just sad how the mighty have fallen. Should be, it's obvious to me over these decades that while Ann Coulter was selling all these books, and Sean Hannity was getting all his listeners and making all that money, and Rush Limbaugh and the rest of them, somebody should have been whispering in their ear. What did they do in Roman times when soldiers would come back from battle? Is this true? I think of the movie Patton that this is talked about, I think, toward the end of the movie. That as these generals or whoever were getting accolades once they came back from the field of battle back in the Roman times, that they had some aide or something whispering there, "You are but human," or "You are but a mortal," or something like that. Meaning trying to keep that person's ego in check. Trying to tell them, yes, you're getting all these accolades, but you're nothing but a human. You're just a frail, weak, flawed human. It's obvious to me that somebody should have been doing that to all of these people for decades now. That their egos have gotten in the way of their better judgment. To the point where Sean Hannity, I guess, can get away with saying, "All right, Ann Coulter," holding him accountable and him being Donald Trump, "that's what we do on this program." That's a guy who needs a reality check. That's a guy who needs to come up to him and say, "You know what, Sean Hannity, you have lost your way. You are but a mortal. You are but a human. You are flawed. That you never even for a second can even entertain the idea that what you're doing is wrong regarding the support of Donald Trump is on you." And this is why I continue to say that I knew that these people supporting Donald Trump just because he was running against Hillary Clinton, I knew this would continue into his administration because that's who people are. To the point where Ann Coulter, and I know what he said, she's saying about indistinguishable from a Jeb Bush administration, that doesn't surprise me at all. Why does it surprise her? He's not conservative. What do you want? Jeb Bush, not conservative. What do you want? Mitt Romney, you liked him too. Not conservative. What do you want? John McCain, not conservative. What do you want? It was your choice to back these people. Just as it was mine. I've made my confession. I've admitted I was wrong back with, you know, with some of that support. I don't have to worry about doing that anymore. But it's a hilarious exchange. The reason that the Trump administration is having a problem with Obamacare and all of this is because of Trump himself, with help from the Congress, in particular the House. That's what's going on. I will further say that I'm not convinced, though, that this problem, if it is a problem, that they're having with, and who knows what the vote's going to happen. It's already happened. I have no idea. Recording this at right before noon on Friday, Eastern time in the United States. I'm not sure this is going to hurt tax reform when that issue pops up. I'm not sure it's going to hurt immigration reform when that issue pops up. I think that those issues will be able to stand on their own eventually. I think that these congressmen, senators, they'll move on. They'll move on. But it feels to me that what Ann Coulter is saying is that, well, these, just like Donald Trump is trying to say to the Freedom Caucus, is that, well, if you don't pass this, you know, then we're going to have problems with tax reform, and we know you want that. And you know, if we don't pass this, we're going to have problems with immigration reform, and we know you want that immigration reform. We know you want that too. So and this is all connected, so you better go along with this. That is flawed thinking. That's completely flawed thing. I don't buy into that at all. You know what's going to hurt Donald Trump regarding all of these topics and why I think they're not going to go the way alleged that he wants? It's him. He is not a true believer in conservatism, as we're seeing with this health care bill, as you will end up seeing with tax reform, as you will see with immigration reform, dare I say it. And that won't be – the reason will not be that they've had problems with this health care bill. It'll be problems with the mentality of whoever is involved in it. And everybody takes the lead of the White House. So – and it's amazing to me that Ann Coulter, for example, couldn't see that these things were going to happen. I mean, you can't sit there and wonder – why healthcare reform in this bill isn't conservative when the president is conservative. And that what he said, and all these things that he said, he has flirted as much with the single payer system and expanded Medicaid and Medicare, expanded government intervention in healthcare as much as any other politician out there. And he said just as many things about that as he has said about free market healthcare. And bidding across state lines and all of that. It's just very confusing to me. It's very confusing. And one more thing, and this is also regarding healthcare in regards to the market. And this was something that Dave told me. And as you know, I don't watch TV. But I guess there is a belief out there that this, you know, the market, quote unquote, the market wants, whatever that means, this healthcare thing just to go away. As I told Dave, I think that the market's going to do what it's going to do. I think it's as we've seen, that people are probably going to continue to have less than great American healthcare, and the market will still go up. I also think it's possible, though, that we have some, you know, could it happen that we really do get Obamacare repealed and the market go down? I don't think those two things are related at all. At all. Now, do I think that Obamacare and Trump care, Ryan care, is related to, in particular, healthcare stocks? Probably. But to the market as a whole, I completely dismiss that. It's going to do what it's going to do. If it sees a positive outlook, for the United States overall, then the market's going to do fine. And we, unfortunately, I guess, you can't have a positive outlook for the United States and still have Obamacare. That's not particularly my idea, but I guess it's possible. But I got to go to the break. You've been listening to America's Conservative Podcast.
The voice of American conservatism, WRS Digital, Red State Talk Radio.
And we're back at America's Conservative Podcast. This is probably as good a time as any to talk about this. Jim Garrity at National Review has a really good article about healthcare in general. Not just about, not about Obamacare, not about Ryan Care or anything, but the problem that we have, and breaks it down, talks about car insurance and how that's different. But he gets down to the root of it, and reading it, I was reminded of my Govicide series, once again, a book series that I don't mention too much on this show anymore, but I probably should. You can find those books on Amazon.com. It's science fiction, future dystopia with some conservative ideology mixed in. And it talks about rights in that movie, or that book. But it talks about it from a standpoint of something can't be a right if someone else is forced to do something. And this is the problem that you have with healthcare when people say that it's a right. People are entitled to healthcare. They're not. The reason is because it takes other people to administer that care. And as soon as that happens, those doctors, those people in the health profession, they become a slave to you with the help of the government. Remember what a right is. We talk about the right to free speech, the right to freedom of religion, the right to not right to own a gun. That doesn't mean necessarily purchase a gun, but the right to own a gun. You certainly don't have a right to have a gun for free, but you have a right to self-defense. But when you start talking about the right to health care, what essentially does that mean? Because you can take your rights with you anywhere in the United States. You have freedom of speech anywhere. You can go to the top of Pikes Peak. You can go to the bottom of the Grand Canyon. You can go to the middle of Las Vegas. You can go out on a boat on the Great Lakes as long as you're in United States territory. And you have freedom of speech all for the day, every day, forever, until you leave this earth. You wouldn't be able to say the exact same thing about healthcare, though, would you? It would be hard to say that you're at the top of Pikes Peak and something happens that you have a right to healthcare. You certainly don't have the right to say that a doctor must go the whole way up to Pikes Peak to help you out, right? And certainly, if you were at the bottom of the Grand Canyon and something happens, you twist your ankle, you break your leg, surely you cannot force a doctor or somebody to go down in there to help you because you have a right to health care, right? Correct, I guess. Too many uses of the word right. See, these are the flaws that start to pop up when you start calling healthcare a right. Well, then you start saying, well, it's only, then you start figuring out, well, then it's only a right when doctors and nurses are around. Well, at that point, it starts sounding like healthcare isn't a right anymore. Because once you start saying that I only have a right when other people are around, that ceases to be a right. It sounds like something else. It sounds like business. It sounds like going to Walmart. Surely if you are at the bottom of the Grand Canyon and you want to buy something, does not mean that Walmart has to fly an entire store and plop it down in front of you in the Grand Canyon. Surely. Surely. Or at the top of Pikes Peak or out in the middle of Lake Erie. Because why? Because shopping at Walmart isn't necessarily a right. It's a privilege. You have to have money. And they have to have product. products, and you have to pay for them. And you know, you can only buy what they have in there. If they don't have something, it doesn't mean you have a right to it, and they have to go out and get it for you immediately. So when you start calling healthcare a right, but it only can be administered when other people are around, it ceases to be a right. It starts to be a transaction. It starts to be a contract between two living beings. Whereas rights in other forms are not that. Are not. So this is what, and I talk about this in really my first two Govicide books. And because it pops up, my main character starts having a discussion with somebody who thinks like this, and it's very confusing to my main character, who has never heard this kind of talk before. This is the danger of thinking of healthcare as a right. Because then what happens, if you are at the top of Pikes Peak, and you're up there on a vacation, you're not like, it's not like you're doing something dangerous like climbing up, you know, you're not mountain climbing or anything, but you rode one of those trains to the top. And you have something happen. And because of that, let's say eventually you do get saved from up there. But let's say you break your leg, it becomes infected, and you have to lose your leg. Surely, you cannot say that your rights were violated. Now, you may be able to sue a doctor for malpractice if you get down off of that mountain and he or she takes a look at you and they don't administer the right care and something like that happens. But surely you cannot say if that happens that your constitutional rights were violated, right? Am I correct on that? We have a right to life, but that doesn't mean we have a right to live well. That doesn't mean that we have a right to make other people provide us our lives. Especially since, and as Jim Garrity says in this article, especially when these people have gone into this profession by choice. All these people who are in the medical community in the United States are not there by force. They are there by choice. Now, if you go to China, maybe go to North Korea, anybody who's in the medical profession there, they might be there by force. Maybe they'd like to get out of the profession, and the government won't let them. In the United States, all these people who show up to hospitals and clinics every day do so by choice. And they are allowed to quit anytime they want. But somehow there are people in the United States who believe that healthcare is a right. So it means, I guess, that those people have to be at the beck and call of everybody else. Meaning, they're not allowed to quit when they want. They're not. In fact, we could get so crazy on it. If people were to allow to quit, I guess we'd have to then force other people to go into the medical profession. Because people's rights need satisfied. See how confusing and horrible this all gets very quickly when you start saying that people have a right to health care. The health care that you happen to have gotten for free by whatever circumstances in your life, if you've been lucky enough to do that, has not been because you have a right to it. You've gotten it because there was some kind doctor or nurse or whoever else that chose to help you anyway. Even though you couldn't pay. He didn't or she didn't do that because you were entitled to it. They did it because they had sympathy for you. And dare I say it, when you all of you who claim that healthcare is a right start saying that, guess what? It's going to become very quick, you're going to find out very quickly the doctors and nurses are probably going to start having less sympathy for you. Because people don't like it when their goodwill is made fun of. And they are taken advantage of. It's a big problem. And dare I say it, this is one of the problems. This is the very reason that healthcare in the rest of the world is so shady. and it hasn't progressed that much. And it's funny because in all these other countries, although they talk about rights, they don't think about rights the way the Americans do. We were taught about rights. As much as we may have in common with France and England and Ireland, those people don't believe that rights come from us just being human. They believe that rights come from the government. And because of that, I guess you can just create rights just out of thin air. And so this is one of the, you know, that they start saying, well, every human should have access to that, should have access to quality health care. That sounds like force to me. That sounds like somebody somewhere is going to be forced to do something at some time. They're going to be pushed with the threat of being thrown in jail if a doctor or nurse doesn't move here and start caring for these kinds of people, because there's no clinic there. There's no hospital there. And that is not what the United States needs. It is not what the world needs. That's going to make healthcare worse for everybody. And dare I say it, people will end up getting less healthcare. All the while, the government trying to say that we're all going to get more healthcare. It's going to be better. And we see a little bit of part of this in Obamacare. That's going to continue with Trump care / Ryan care / House of Representatives care, where insurance companies are forced to take people who run them out of business. And that is no different than forcing a doctor to go down into the Grand Canyon to help somebody who twisted their leg or broke their leg or something like that, with the threat of throwing that doctor in jail, that nurse in jail, if they don't do this. It's no different than that. And it's all horrible. But this article, National Review, Jim Garrity, did a really nice job with that, and so I wanted to recognize him. Let's move on to something else. You know, this is very curious. This whole Andrew Malcolm at hotair.com attempts to kind of put it in the simplest of terms, what is going on with this whole wiretapping controversy, the FISA request from October, and the incidental surveillance, and everything else. And he does a decent job of it. But I still have some questions. And he doesn't even come close to answering them in this article. And the center of his article is about Michael Flynn, the former national security advisor who had to resign / got fired. Because if you don't remember the way that went down, there was surveillance going on of Russian diplomats. Michael Flynn had a conversation with one of these Russian ambassadors, some diplomat. And I'm not even sure that it was anything bad or anything else. The problem was that he was then asked later by Mike Pence, vice president, if he ever talked to any Russian people over the last few months or whatever else. And Michael Flynn said no. And then these tapes came out where it showed that Michael Flynn had lied to Mike Pence, and because of that, of course, the trust had been broken, and so Michael Flynn had to go. And everybody, at least on the Republican side, is upset that Michael Flynn's name should have never been released. And that's true. It is illegal to release confidential information, and as Andrew Malcolm goes through in this, usually what happens in circumstances like this where the intelligence community is monitoring somebody from Russia they have their eye on, and that person happens to talk to an American. And they're just talking about the weather. Nothing, and it's not code or anything else. That person's name, even if the intelligence agency knows who the person is, that person is never identified by name. He's just called American One, Number One, American Number Two. The names are never given out. But in this particular case, somehow somebody in the intelligence community released Michael Flynn's name. And that is supposed to be illegal. And a lot of people are still upset about that. Here's the problem I have with it. And see, I look at this from the totally opposite side. Because the allegation is that somebody in the intelligence community was trying to make the Trump administration look bad by saying, hey, look. See, we got his national security advisor talking with the Russians. Don't you see there's some sort of conspiracy there? I have another spin. I have a different spin on this. And I hope you'll hear me out on this. Could it be that the reason that Michael Flynn's name was released was because whoever released his name was fearful, knew that Michael Flynn lied to the administration, lied to Mike Pence in particular, and was afraid that this might cause a controversy somewhere down the road, that Michael Flynn might be compromised. And by releasing his name, it greatly avoided a problem for the Trump administration somewhere down the road. Does anybody not see that? Does anybody not see that? Because that's the first thing that comes to mind. Everybody wants to say, well, it's illegal. He was trying to make the Trump administration look bad. What if this person was trying to save the Trump administration a headache somewhere down the road? Because I have a hard time imagining what would have happened under different circumstances. Let's say that Michael Flynn is recorded and he lies to Mike Pence and his name is not released. But the administration finds out that Mike Flynn lied to Mike Pence. Does the Trump administration keep him or let him go? Would they, if he would have still been asked to resign, do you think that the American people would have ever found out why he was being let go? Why he was resigning? Why he got fired? See, I say that if he truly talked to this guy and it was completely harmless, lied to the administration about this conversation, and they found out about it, they had to get rid of him one way or the other. That's my opinion. But that my belief is that they weren't going to get rid of him. They were going to keep him on anyway. I guess not completely understanding the situation that they could maybe work themselves into regarding Mike Flynn, being that he was carrying around this lie, and the Trump administration perfectly, obviously, didn't understand that, of what that could mean. Even if they found out that he lied. I'm asking you as an American, do you want somebody in a national security position who lied to his bosses, and then when they found out, they said that was okay? Is that what you want from the executive office? No matter who's president, whether it's Donald Trump, George W. Bush, Barack Obama, whoever else, is that what you want? That's not what I want. That's not what I want. So it's hard for me to understand. It very well could be that this person released this name because he or she knew that this was going to cause problems somewhere down the road, and that to get rid of Mike Flynn right now was the best move. It's just that the Trump administration didn't want to do that. Now, granted, it's up to them whether they want to keep somebody or not. But would you say that it's in the people's, the citizens of the United States' best interests when you have a national security advisor, main national security person to the president, who lied and the president let him do it? This is more than just Trump accepting what Mike Flynn said. There's a bigger issue, and that's the national security of the United States. And see, I think this is one more way how conservative media has gotten distorted. Automatically, all conservatives think, oh, they did that. It's illegal. Shouldn't have been done. Trying to make the Trump administration look stupid, and everything. I say that releasing that information saved the Trump administration a headache somewhere down the road. And I also happen to believe that it's clear to me that Trump wanted to keep him on just because. Because it was his pick. Donald Trump's never wrong. Even if one of his lackeys lies to him, he's going to keep him around because Donald Trump doesn't want to be seen as making the wrong decision. This is why I continue to say that everything in the end centers on how Donald Trump thinks he is going to look. And what this intelligence person did, man or woman, I have no idea who it is. Nobody does at this point. Took that out of Donald Trump's hands. Because dare I say it, if this would have happened in any other administration, I think that Mike Flynn would have been gone. And it just would have come out, it just would have naturally come out that, you know what, we had to get rid of him. He lied to us about a conversation he had with somebody from Russia. He said he didn't do it. We found out that he did. And we just don't think that that's the best thing to have from a national security rise. We wish Mike Flynn the best in everything that he wants to do with the rest of his life. He just can't be national security advisor for the United States. That's how I think other presidents would have handled it. It would have gotten out there anyway. Because I think a good president would have found this information out and got rid of it and then had to offer an explanation. It's just, we got the explanation. We found out about all this because the Trump administration didn't want it to get out that Mike Flynn lied. So I want you to think about it more in those terms. Instead of thinking about how, you know, it's the deep state, they're out to get Trump. Could it be that somebody just did this and avoided a problem down the road? Should Mike Flynn had stayed as national security advisor and Donald Trump's president, and you find out somewhere down the road, 6 months from now, a year from now, somehow this gets out, that Mike Flynn lied to the administration and they kept around. How would that make them look? Probably pretty bad. And you'd probably think the past year in which Mike Flynn was national security advisor, you'd probably start thinking, well, I wonder if he was blackmailed during this time. I wonder where his loyalties really lie. Now you don't have to worry about that anymore because we got somebody new in there who hopefully won't lie to the president and the vice president. And if he does, they'll maybe learn this time that they have to get rid of him. Why does everything have to always be partisanship? Why does it have? Why do we? I know what the person did was illegal. I know that. And if that person is tracked down, they should go to jail. But I can't deny that what this person did actually helped the administration, not hurt it. But all we can do is see today. Today's news. He's getting bad news. Can't see 6 months down the road where this could have grown into a much bigger problem. And so in that way, I think this person who risked, is probably risking his freedom in doing this, probably, you know, took a load off of this administration. Now, granted, because they have enough problems going on already. Why can't we look at it that way? Because we really don't have any proof either way. I just don't understand why we always have to default to the partisanship side. But I got to go. You can find the show Monday through Friday, 9 p.m. Eastern on the Prime Channel, RedStateTalkRadio.com. You can also find it at Podomatic and iTunes, Twitter, USA Podcast, my other show, new episode coming out today called Vanished in the Gulf. Unfound is a missing persons program that I do. Find it on Podomatic and iTunes. I hope you have a beautiful weekend. You've been listening to America's Conservative Podcast.